The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 16th of July, 2021. On the podcast today, Vadim Alexander, head of healthcare at SP Angel, discusses Allergy Therapeutics, AGY's ticker there. Also, Dan Lane, senior analyst at Free Trade, discusses results from Hochschokla, Quiz, Distill, and Hutchmed. Also, at the end of the podcast, I'll be highlighting the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most read RNSs. Now, you can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. The homepage will see lots of the content. In fact, there's a video there with Paul Hill. I've just been watching that, actually. He's talking to Jamie Constable, who's the chief economist at Singer Capital Markets. And lots of interesting stats being thrown around there. Plus, there's also another video. He's on fire today. Paul, talking to Revolution Beauty, CEO interview, a new IPO. Articles on Eve's sleep. You can see that there from Fran. There's some stuff there on Zach Mayer's bulletin board heroes. He's looking at Argo Blockchain, Cineworld, Glantis, Pantheon, and Zoltav. Sigma Rock raises 260 million, and that's from Fran there, of course. And one thing I always like to check out on the front page is the COVID-19 index. Biggest riser there is Fusion Antibodies, up 6% to 132.5. Biggest faller today is Avacta Group, down 7% to 127. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vadim Alexander, head of healthcare SP Angel. You all right, fella?
How are you doing, Justin?
Not good. Well, I'm okay. But just the portfolio at the moment, it's so annoying. It's just grinding lower. I've talked to quite a few people on social media, and even in the US, actually, a guy who's a fund manager up there, and he's primarily small caps. He's saying, don't be convinced by what's happening with the S&P. You know, the S&P is very heavily weighted towards these titans, you know, the Apples and Microsofts, Amazons. And whilst they're doing quite well, the majority of the index is struggling a bit, you know, but it doesn't seem that way because it's heavily weighted towards the big guys. Now, in the UK, it's the same. It's like for the last 2 months, pretty much, 6 to 8 weeks, it's been hard work. It's been like walking through, you know, treacle with lead boots on, but going downhill. And I think, come on, you get some news out and some decent news, and it may stop the share price, going down, but it's no big rallies. I mean, there are odd rallies here and there, but generally, everyone's thinking, this is depressing. It's like death by a thousand cuts. You know, it's slowly every day. There's no big drop off a cliff and bounce back. It's just slowly drip feed. And so it's one of those things, you know, that happens in the markets, especially over summer, lack of liquidity. But it's a psychological battle, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, it is a difficult market, I have to say. It's definitely been felt in healthcare on AIM. And kind of the things I've seen is some of the more robust companies are resilient, as you would expect, right? But it's good to distinguish them from the others, because it's exactly in times like these, or worse times, you know, there might be an even heavier correction coming for all we know.
But don't say that.
I'm hoping, actually, my view, and you never know what's going to happen, right? But is I think there's still room for a significant leg up. But I do think that the illiquidity of the summer will drag on for a few more weeks. Last year, actually, in the summer, and I'm only speaking about healthcare here, but what we saw was right around the dog days of summer, mid-August, things started to pick up all of a sudden. And, you know, people were trying to get ahead of the September return.
Yeah.
And stocks started to move very quickly upwards. So fingers crossed, it'd be great to see something like that again this year. Certainly for the next 3 weeks or 4 weeks until then, I would expect even less liquidity and more of the same of what we've seen for the last month.
Yeah. But the thing is, the odd thing is, you can, and I've said this with many people who are, especially new investors, I say, if you're invested in a growing, improving business, that's a small cap, it's grinding lower, don't focus, try not to focus on the share price. That is not the business. We're talking about the general market sentiment here that's bringing the share price down, yes. But if you jump out, you can't guarantee all of a sudden it'll start rallying. And so what you do not buy that business back. Because I've read some of the articles recently on timing the market. When you get times like this, you do sort of reevaluate, analyze, read stuff. And it's amazing how just missing out on the even the best 5 days, in 10 years can change your portfolio value massively. And especially if you miss out on 10. And the thing is, this is the kicker. Those good days happen very close to the bad days. So unless you are a genius or you're a clairvoyant, you've got ESP, you can't jump out before a bad day and then jump back in for a good day. It doesn't work like that. And so you've got to take the rough with the smooth. And because what happens is some people will have enough. They'll jump out at the low because they've been sitting there for weeks, procrastinating. I can't do this. And all. They'll jump at the low, the market rally, they'll buy higher than they sold. That is not the way to do it, So you're right, actually. I think we are in for a decent rally, especially in the small cap space. What tends to happen, you'll see, fund managers or investors will say, hang on, the small caps have been taking a bit of a hammer. Some good bargains there. We know towards the end of the year, if you can split the year into two parts, essentially, and returns from September to May are better than, September to April are generally better than May to August. And so they'll get ahead of that run-up towards the end of the year, hopefully, and they'll start, a bit more inflow will start happening, But the timing of that, we never know. It could be a lot earlier, because like you said, the December rally, traditionally, was a bit later. Now it's coming earlier, because people are trying to get ahead of that all the time. So you're right, money will come into the market. It's just when,
And correct.
It's hard to pre-guess that or know when that's going to happen. But it will happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in terms of healthcare, so as you know, a lot of these companies operate or create products that are launched into an international global market, right?
Yeah.
They're innovation driven. So if you discover something that's truly unique, well, it's it's not just a local market. It's not, they should be less impacted by local markets. However, what we've seen with healthcare stocks on AIM is just still a huge discrepancy with the U.S. Markets. And we know that in the U.K. we have that across the board, right? Look at the FTSE 100. I find it's drastically undervalued compared to where U.S. markets have gone. So that's true as a whole. There is a discount, but in healthcare, the discount is enormous. It's completely unjustified, specifically because we're not talking about FTSE 250 companies that are selling just into the UK market. We're talking about technologies that apply globally, right?
Yeah, but I just posted basically in my investment share club in our chat group there, basically talking about Plarium, saying it's been grinding low for the last a couple of sessions. And I say, listen, this is now 183 million market cap. It may seem expensive in AIM market terms, but if you look across the pond there, this is a company here with a pioneering sort of drug device. It's globally significant. Long COVID has made it even more significant. It's 184 million market cap. It's cheap. And if the S&P drops any further, and in the US, it'll be valued in multiples of this. And let's be honest, apart from the listing, they're pretty much a US company. And I could see in the future, maybe then going for a listing on the NASDAQ. So yeah, it is. When you get to companies, like say medical companies, that are globally significant, then it's very odd that you see this discrepancy in values between us and the US, isn't it?
It is. And we have a few local players that demonstrate that gap. I mean, Renalytix being the ultimate one in showing that, you could have a $1 billion company on AIM because they're dual listed on NASDAQ, right?
Yeah.
But is Renalytix any different to Plarium in terms of potential? No, not really. In my opinion. You know what I mean? So yeah. Plarium, in fact, if anything, has a little bit more of a, they do have some revenues already. You know what I mean? So there's already some interest in their technology. So I guess my main point is, yes, I do believe exactly as you've said, Plarium has every bit of potential that the Renalytix had. Currently, they're just they're listed on AIM. One day, I hope to see them dual listed and rising to the same highs, and if not higher.
It's a big date coming up as well. So I mean, that's and we get FDA, and I can't see it dropping before that date. I mean, I'd say the chances are it's going to rise towards that date or expectation.
Correct. Correct. That's what you often see as a rally. So I would say, okay, you know, the market is the reason why I think a lot of these stocks are taking a hit. Right now, Polarian is taking a hit indeed, but from all-time highs, right? So it's re-rated a little bit. I think it hit highs of 102p and then now it's at 86p, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So is this an opportunity? Yes, I believe it's an opportunity. I'm a holder. I've been a holder, you know, ever since I bought shares, haven't sold a share. And I do believe, like you do, I think, listening to some previous podcasts of yours, Justin, you know, I see this as a significant, this company, the technology has significant potential. So I find they're grossly undervalued at this level. So I believe they have the same potential that Renalytics has. They're in a completely different areas, but I just mean, if there's a company that I can see following the same pathway, it's Polarian. Others are Spectral MD. You know, we mentioned that on another call previously, very similar also, and also US companies listed here in London. It takes some time for these companies in the early years, but they finally get there. Certainly Polarian has, and Spectral, obviously it's in their early days as a listed business, but I have, you know, every belief that it'll do the same. Yeah. And then when you talk about kind of more robust businesses, they don't have to be big. They could be small. One we like and we've talked about a lot here is Cambridge Cognition, still marching on, continues to march on. You know, it's why am I recommending it again? Is you look at Cambridge Cognition, another company I want to talk about today is Allergy Therapeutics, which we've mentioned in the past. You know, I like these companies. I hold these companies. Another one is Tissue Regenics. Why? Because they have revenues. They are more resilient if there is, for, you know, if there is ever a correction. They are businesses that are businesses. You know, there's less speculative elements to them. Of course, in healthcare, there is always the backdrop is these are highly speculative stocks, but relative to other AIM healthcare stocks, which have no revenues and it's all speculation, these ones have revenues and have something to fall back on. Mm. And which is yet another reason why I still think they're undervalued and have huge potential. So I've named a few. Let's talk about maybe Allergy today because they had an announcement, I think yesterday, their trading update.
Yeah, AGY. Yes. Trading update for the year ended. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so, I mean, a great set of steady results. 8% growth top line. This in spite of still a COVID environment. They're selling their allergy products across Europe. And, you know, a lot of other companies are seeing headwinds when it comes to commercial, you know, commercial progress. Mm-hmm. Whereas this company steadily just keeps delivering their high single digit revenue growth. They have further products in the pipeline. They have two. So you remember we talked about this just in terms of their, if there's one that I find that's colossally undervalued compared to its peers, it's this one. This one still has a lot of opportunity, I think, to rise. So they just said they have, they're going to do some 84 million sterling in revenues. Their year end is June 30th. So the year end just completed. So the trading update for that.
Look at the cash. They got 40 million cash.
So look, let's look at the market cap. Market cap is 170
million. Yeah,
yeah. 40 in cash puts it on an EV of, you know, 131. And revenues are 84 historic and growing at, let's call it whatever, 10% a year. So it'd probably be somewhere around 90 something next year. And then, you know, nearing 100, not in within the next 2 years. So that in the current year that's just started, they'll probably do if you just use a 8% growth rate, right? Mm-hmm. And then plus COVID is hopefully resolving itself over the next year. So their sales teams could do their jobs better in terms of selling into Europe. So, you know, I would expect that single digit growth rate at least to continue, if not maybe improve a little bit, because now that people can actually move around a bit more, or will be able to hopefully move around a bit more in the next 12 months, sales should pick up even further. So, but you get all that, you get the trading business at whatever it is, 1.2, 1.3 times EV. So already that's cheap. And then over and above that, you have clinical programs. So they have a phase 3 program that has an interim report coming, which is in the second half of this year. There's also an earlier stage peanut allergy program, which is a big area, by the way. I mean, it's huge. As that, it's an earlier stage program, but as that program advances, I think it'll create a lot of value for the business. You know, so you have clinical readouts coming, some preclinical work readouts coming, all this in the coming year, and it's all for free as far as I'm concerned. You know, other companies are worth more in terms of market cap with far less cash and no revenues. This company is doing almost 100 million in revenues, has 40 million in cash, and has clinical programs, one of which is almost a phase three program, right? How is this thing valued at 171 million? I still don't get it. So slowly, I think, and I believe the markets are picking up on it. It's been a slow one, this one. It has done well, but it's not done as well as the others. So I feel that there's a bit of a pickup here, and people are starting to realize that. So trading is improving. I think it's at 26. Sorry, the trading in the stock's improved. It's about 26p. Sorry, a little over this morning. So 26.5 p is the share price. So it's slowly moving up. It's on a 2-year high. That sounds like maybe not the right time to buy. But just think about the valuation metrics we just discussed. It's still, you know, it's still grossly undervalued. And more importantly, it's one of these robust stocks that I was telling you about. You know, I've held it for I think almost going on 2 years. I still like it, and I can see myself holding it for some time.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. I mean, the share price is rising, but like you say, it's nowhere near at where it should be in it valuation wise, you know. So and like I said, with that amount of cash there, it's nuts. So I would say, you know, even being conservative, you could say 10% top line growth, and if you go from 83, that's 91 next year, 100 million next year, 111, 122, and yet they're still not using that cash either. So that cash is still going to be there, isn't it? So yeah. So, it's undervalued. But the chart looks good, actually. I mean, even now, it's broken out. It seems like it's broken to a new range here. So it could be going a bit further up, I think.
Well, this is it. So mimicking, say, Cambridge Cognition, where it's just a steady, you know, positive announcement after another. Similarly, Allergy is just earlier down that curve. Completely different businesses, right? Allergy is a much bigger business. But my point being is it's just marching forward steadily. Where there are risks are these readouts that are coming, right? There's always danger with clinical, any kind of, you know, scientific readout. So that's in the next year. You'll hear of two of them, the peanut allergy one and then the grass allergy interim phase three trial. So it's in preparation for a phase three trial. So that's probably the riskier of the two. But often before those readouts, you see rallies. So much like in Polarians, you know, they're waiting for the results from their FDA submission. That's in early October. So you could expect some activity before that. Often you see trading before that. So again, in the next 6 to 12 months, Allergy is one to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. That's good. AGY, chart looking very strong. Good, strong trend there from, let's be honest. In fact, it dipped down. It's really have a nice bow with that chart. It's really come down in March back last year. Of course, everything fell. But that was the time. 8p it was then. And that March drop-off, or even end up, I think it dipped down at 7p. And now it's at 26p. So nice. And it's based off fundamentals, which is sustainable, you know, which is good. Marvellous stuff. Vadim, thanks for that, fella. And we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Justin. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dan Lane, the Senior Analyst at Free Trade. You all right, Dan?
Very well, Justin. How are you?
Yeah, good. It's funny, we're talking to people, slowly and surely the economy sort of getting back to normal, work's getting back to normal, but also social life. Like I said, you went to a wedding last week, which, probably, you know, they haven't been happening for over a year now. I think weddings, all, if you can have a wedding, it's like you and someone else and that's it. But yeah, it's very odd, but was it enjoyable? Was it very different compared to a normal wedding?
It was great fun. Do you know, it was, and I'm starting to get used to these kind of smaller ones. I've been to a few, and I really quite like them. Because I think, you know, you don't get the people who maybe didn't expect to be invited and, you know, they didn't want to be invited. So, everyone was on top form. I quite like them.
Yeah. But you're saying there's no dancing allowed, is it?
No, there was no dancing. Thank goodness for me. I was a get out of jail free card.
Yeah, some people are probably thinking, great, I don't have to dodge. Brilliant. Some of the middle, especially middle-aged guys who were, in fact, you get a lot of middle-aged guys after a few pints. You almost think they've been, you know, keeping it held in for years, and finally a couple of pints, they're out on the dance floor going crazy. Yes! I got an excuse to let go. But no, I suppose some people would see that as a relief, I suppose. But it would seem odd, because I went back to my wedding and the dancing was a major part of it. You know, people were enjoying themselves dancing. So that would seem a bit odd. But I suppose they can always... Do you know what could happen? I can see my wife already loves a wedding. She's saying, let's get married again. Well, she said to me the other day, well, I was walking the dog. She said, I want to get married. And I said, who to? she said, no, again. And I thought, if you have one of these restricted weddings, you may do it again, you know? And that's a boost for maybe the wedding trade. I mean, because my wife's already asking to do it again. She likes it so much. I said, it's not a birthday party. It's a wedding. You don't have them every year, you know? But there's a possibility of that, I suppose, isn't it? For a boost, maybe.
Absolutely. I haven't thought about that. Like a renewal of vows and things like that. Yeah, good show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk companies then. Companies with news out. In this weather, it'd be melting a bit, but Hotel Chocolat, what's happened? Some news out from those, is it?
Yeah, so I think it piqued my interest because I saw that they upped their full year guidance. But actually, reading through it, there's a few more interesting parts to it. So, upping their guidance, I think we spoke previously about how these kind of unique, individual, idiosyncratic firms have something to gain by not trying to be everything to everybody. And Hotel Chocolat has always been the one that I point to in that regard. If we look at during lockdown sales, I mean, it's especially outside of the UK, sales in the US up 62% on last year. And it's got a joint venture partnership people don't really pay attention to in Japan. That's up nearly 300% on last year. And I know, listen, people look at last year and say, well, that's not a fair comparison. It was a low base and lockdown and everything. But if you look at their results now, they're saying revenues are going to come in at 165 million. That's 24% up on 2019.
Yeah.
And sales are still going to be up 34% on 2019. So if we take out last year completely, those are still really positive. And I think the big part of that struck me was that 50% of their revenue is now from their digital and subscriptions. Which is huge, given that, you know, these Hotel Chocolat stores are so well stocked, they're all nice and pretty, and they might actually just get rid of a few if they're saying 50% come from online instead.
Yeah, I can see that happening. I mean, you know, I'm watching this at the moment. I get on the treadmill in the mornings, and I like to watch business stuff. I like Dragon's Den. I also watch, because I'm Welsh, this young Welsh and successful as young business people, you know, setting up. And I noticed a lot of them sort of getting taken out. In fact, there's two women there. They're both different companies, but they've got these sort of novelty cards. One of rude cards you send to people, you know, the funny rude cards. And the other one's a bit pink and fluffy cards. And they're both doing well, but they're online, and they've gone the other way. Because the retail outlets, I think, are empty, and, you know, a lot of people are leaving these retail outlets. They've just picked up very cheap outlets, you know. And I don't know if that's good for them, because they've got an online model there. Why do you... And I think they always think that they're calling it a flagship store, but, you know, it wasn't a huge... It was in St. David's Centre in Cardiff. But it wasn't a huge store, but they almost want this bricks and mortar, you know, sort of icon, a sort of a flagship for their company, you know, something to look at and something tangible rather than just having online presence, you know. It shows that them, their friends, their family, they've got something there, they stand for something. I suppose it's an extension of their brand, isn't it? It's that icon there, but I'm just wondering if that's going the right way. I know he's taking advantage of this. I mean, it's like, at the moment, I'm invested in Escapant, but they've said in quite a few of their releases, they're now getting access to really premium high footfall retail centres because there's so many people leaving them, whereas before they wouldn't have been, before the pandemic, they wouldn't have been able to afford them. But now, these landlords are coming to them and giving them incentives to take out long leases, you know, so it's good for some, not for others. But you'd think if the online Hotel Chocolat is doing so well, and I'm looking here through this release, and everything is high double digits percentage gains, like, you know, UK customer base grown by 66%, USA 60-odd%, Japan sales grew 277%. So it's looking very good, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That, I mean, there's a balance, right, between getting a presence in on the high street and then just throwing money at a vanity project to tell everyone I'm here and I'm doing well. Yeah. And I think Hotel Chocolat, if without those stores, you would never have gone online to buy chocolate, really. But the fact that it's presented itself, and those stores are very pretty. They're always in like a nice precinct. If I think about Cabot Circus in Bristol or kind of the Victoria Square in Belfast, it's always a nice area that they're in, and they have a nice service. They've branched out into different things, you know, like toffee vodkas and things. And they've got this, is it a Velvetizer? Is that what it is? It's their big hot chocolate product that was all over the advertising last Christmas. So, you know, they do know what they're doing. They've got a good marketing team, and they are selling products. And that's just my thing. I think why, you know, pay for these stores unless, as you say, you're maybe getting knocked down rent in somewhere like Bluewater, you'd be silly not to take it up.
Exactly, the high footfall areas and all that stuff. You'd successful stores, you'd stay and keep with maybe, and then get rid of them. Exactly. It's going to be a change. I think this pandemic's brought on a massive change, isn't it? We'll see it. We'll see the churn over the next couple of years, I think. Cool. So that's Hotel Chocolat. Next one up is, I've lost my email there. There we are. Quiz. Do you know what? Somebody emailed me about these the other day, before the results came out, and I asked my wife. And I didn't know. I knew they were into clothes and stuff, and I said, what's the quiz like? Any good? And she went, no, rubbish. I don't know if they're just having a quiz or whether it's closed door, but I'm assuming closed door. But what's happened here then? Any good news out?
Well, yes, actually. Yeah, I mean, the background to quiz, I remember following them, and I remember texting my young sister as they were going public, thinking, and I was just asking, what do you think? Because I'm seeing all their advertisements all over the tube and all over these train stations.
Yeah.
And I think, do you know what? They were meant to be the next Boohoo, and they never really made it. And I think part of that is just like we were saying, they hedged their bets. They originated in Glasgow. They had loads of these physical stores, but more of a presence online. At one stage, it was nearly 50-50 there, and I think they've gone more online. But realistically, they just need to get rid of these stores. Because they were the part that held them back during the pandemic. And, you know, it's been a bit up and down, a bit Jekyll and Hyde here, because, you know, revenues to the end of March were down 66%. But then, you know, the latest update this week, 3 months to June, total sales came in at 17 million against 4 million last year. So there's a recovery story there. But again, it's this noose around the neck of, you know, what are you? Are you a pure play online player? Are you going to compete with Boohoo and ASOS? Or are you a high street like Next with a little bit of an online following? Or, you know, where are you? And again, they're neither, because they're somewhere in the middle. And I think this is why, you know, the recent performance has been fine. You know, if you look at kind of since November 2020, the share price is broadly up. There's been a few blips along the way. But it doesn't make up for the fact that, you know, maybe, although, I mean, over the last 4 years, share price is in its boots. It was at 200, nearly 200 at launch. Yeah. And I think it hit 200 later that year. And now we're sitting at about 12. So I think it's very difficult if I'm an investor in retail to think, why would I not go for the online pure play? And why would I go for a pure play? Or why would I go for an online player that still has on this all this inexplicable high street flagship stores? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And also, whenever you get, you know, whenever you're a new entrant into a sector where there's been previously very good, you know, performers like ASOS and Boohoo, you always get that sort of name tag. Oh, it's the next Boohoo. You know, you always get people who bought stock saying it's the next ASOS, it's the next Boohoo. But in actual fact, there's so many close companies out there at the moment now wanting to be the next. I mean, you know, the market share is tiny these days, isn't it? Because there's so many online people coming up and doing this. So, always be wary of that. It's the next big, whatever it is you say, it's the next big, and then you insert the market top dog there, you know, the dominating market brand. Yeah, it's always wary for investors, and you always get that. But they've got to prove it out. I suppose that's good growth, but like I said, the share price has been languishing for a while, hasn't it? So is this a recovery or is it a false dawn? Hard to say. I suppose the figures will bear it out in the end, but who knows? Last couple of months, it's been sort of running upwards slowly, but coming back down. But again, it's all in the figures. We'll see. It's a competitive marketplace. So, like you say, they're online and bricks and mortar. It's hard to know. But there we are. My thoughts now is, what do they have that's now unique compared to anyone else? You know, because I've not heard anyone. I don't know. What did your sister say anything about them? Did she know anything about them? I mean, did she rave about them or anything?
No, not really. She just said that a whole load of people on Love Island were wearing their clothes, but you get what you pay for, and it's fairly cheap. And yeah. I think, you know, the other platforms are cheap, but now that the likes of Ace, this Boohoo scandal still hanging over them, the Esther working conditions scandal, yeah. And a whole load of people, a load of stockists have just dropped them. So ASOS have dropped them, a load of other people have dropped them. And I think some people might be thinking that this is a little entry point for Quiz. You know, if you drop Boohoo, you might pick up Quiz, but that doesn't last forever. And, you know, Boohoo isn't going to roll over with all of this, and they've got enough cash in the bank. And I think in this online space, the leaders have enough money to put back into their business and then own the advertising and get a big return on capital employed. And I think you start to see a huge gap between the winners and losers, and not just an opportunity for them to come in. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, more stuff. Distill. Look at the chart on this. It's quite nice. It's been rallying since, back in April. It's been rallying strongly since then. It's gone from 0.84 pence to 2.6. So what's happening here? Is it 84 pence? What's the price at the moment? Yeah, 2.6 has gone from 0.8. Yeah.
So it's, Distill, I don't know if anyone's heard of it. It's a remarkably small market cap. It's around just under 15 million. I think it's like 13 million at this stage. So they do make spirits, and I think their big product is Red Leg Rum. It's one of these spirits you've probably seen in the pub and you think, I don't really know that brand name. And it tends to be more trade sales than supermarket sales. I mean, a lot of the stuff is in the supermarket, but you'd look past it, you wouldn't recognize it, because you'd either go for, you know, the big brand names or else the supermarket owned. They sit somewhere in the middle in no man's land. So it tends to be selling into the pub trade is their bread and butter. Obviously, last year was really not fantastic for them, but they've just said that first quarter revenues were up 10% and volumes were up 15%. So a little bit of a lift there. I think there's a concern there, because they've said themselves that, you know, this airport duty free was where they made a lot of money. And now the travel retail is just, it's completely shot at the minute. They're having a real troubling time. But I think when there's also a little bit of a supply chain logistics factor there as well, because they want to sell into the EU. They want to expand into Europe. And I think people are backing that, because they're not necessarily big names in the UK, but sometimes these names can do well on the continent instead. And I think people are backing that. The big interest for me was that if you look at their chart, they were relatively unscathed during the pandemic. There was no huge drop. Yes, the share price was down, but there's no dramatic fall. Yeah. It was a kind of slow burner, which tells me that it's maybe less sensitive to kind of these broader economic moves, which is a bit strange, because you think it would be. It's consumer spending, it's discretionary. But no, it's maybe something interesting to keep an eye on then.
That is very odd. I'm looking at the March 2020 year, which pretty much every stock I know had a big fall off a cliff there. You know, everything sold off, even gold sold off, you know. So everyone's dashing for cash. And yet, I'm going to March 20 and there's been nothing. It's like, no. And then, in fact, on the 9th of April, it just jumped up by about 31%. Yeah. It went up by 31%. So that's really odd, isn't it? Oh, wow. Yeah, I've never seen that on a chart before. Wow.
No,
maybe people went for the drink, did they, on that day?
Maybe they did. Yeah. I think, do you know what? A lot of these small caps, they're so far down people's priority lists. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Distill, I mean, it really hasn't. If you look at the long term, it's really in its boots. Maybe some investors are just thinking, well, you know, we had this fall a couple of years ago. We don't need it again. But it could be a reflection of maybe fair value. And the stock hasn't dropped because people thought, well, we're already having a fall. We're already at decent value here. It's not going to do it again.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the average daily volume here is about 15 grand. So, you know, that's not a lot of money going through that, is it? So I suppose there's maybe there weren't that many people there to sell anyway, you know?
That's true.
Cool. And finally, what's the last one? Hutchmed. What's all that about?
Yeah, so this is the artist formerly known as Hutchison China Meditech, and then ChiMed, and it's got HCM. It's got all these nicknames. It's now rebranded as Hutchmed, and this is kind of China-focused medical and biotech firm. But it's It's interesting because it's obviously listed in the UK, and its backers were Hutchison Whampoa of the Whampoa family, who get a very, very good name with corporate governance. And this is why you'll get a lot of interest from institutions in the UK because of that stability that the family offers. So if you look at Mark Slater, Jim Slater's son, who runs the Slater Growth Fund, he's always been a big advocate of HutchMed on those grounds that you're getting, you know, access to China with regulatory approval from the UK and kind of a nice little nod to oversight from the Whampoa family. So what's happened this week? Well, they've just announced their first commercial sale of this lung cancer treatment. Let me try and say it. Savolitinib. There we go. But it's for aggressive lung cancer cases in which, you know, chemotherapy maybe isn't working or there's a reason why they can't perform it. And I think that's kind of perked up the ears of the market there, because, you know, more than a third of the world's lung cancer patients are in China. And that's, you know, the opportunity set is there. But also the commercial agreement they have is that they'll develop the product and then AstraZeneca will market it and commercialize it for them. And for that, HutchMed, they get fixed royalties of 30% on all China sales. So they are an unknown quantity, you know, mostly. I'd be surprised if most people on the call or on the will have heard of them. But when you've got AstraZeneca in your corner, especially in the commercialization, that's a little bit of a boon. So, yeah. You know, a lot of times in this space, people are hanging off trial results and one-offs and maybes and what am I going to get after 15 years of testing? Is it going to be approved? It's nice to have a big player back you up and say, we'll take it from here and we'll commercialize the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Where's the ticker there? What's the ticker on there? HCM, is it? Yeah.
Yes, HCM. They're on NASDAQ.
Marvellous stuff, HutchMed there, and yeah, market cap. They're on the UK as well, aren't they? UK listed as well, HutchMed China. Is
that, yeah, yeah,
is
yes.
That, yeah, so 367 market cap, is that correct? Or about that, 400 million?
So I've got, yes, yeah, yeah. So they're listed in the UK. They've got an ADR on NASDAQ. That's one of these dual listings that China's getting a little bit nervous about. But yeah, I mean, certainly institutional investors in the UK have liked that UK listing.
Yeah, yeah, marvellous stuff. Dan, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak to you next week.
Great stuff. Cheers, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Source Bio International. It's 1.45, non-mover. At four, E-Energy, non-mover, 21 pence. At three, Blue Star Capital, non-mover, 0.15. At two, Bellascura, non-mover, 66.5. And at one, Altona Rare Earth, down 5% to 9.5. Pence, of course, and I say of course, you may not know that, but yes, not, you know, after a big sell-off, it's nice a bit of stability. I mean, not everything is flat, but it's not as volatile going down as it was last few days. Okay, check out that list and this list, which is the top five most read RNSs on Vox Markets platform at voxmarkets.co.uk, and they are here. I was filling there. I don't know if you can tell that. At five, Pantheon Resources, Management Resource Upgrade and Investor Webinar. At four, Extract Resources, Phase 2 Drilling commences at Bushranger. At three, Alien Metals, Remote Access to Annual General Meeting. At two, Power Metal Agreement, Canadian Lithium Properties. And at one, Eve Sleep, Trading Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.